You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a look into how Wisconsin became the Badger State.
We recently received a listener question in the Wisconsin mailbag. Michael from Dane County asked, why is the badger Wisconsin state animal? WPR's John K. Wilson went digging to find out more.
Wisconsin is the badger state. It's on the flag, it's the mascot of the state's biggest university, and back in 1957, lawmakers put the badger into state law as Wisconsin's official animal. But why? Badgers live in plenty of states, and they're pretty rare here. It's not like you see them running around willy-nilly like squirrels. To get some answers, I figured why not start by going straight to the source. Bucky, pretty common name for badgers, I guess, is the resident education badger at Henry Vilas Zoo in Madison. He goes on field trips and teaches kids about nature, so maybe he'd have something to tell me. On a recent morning, I talked with him in his enclosure while he was eating a hard-boiled egg. Hi, Bucky. John K. Wilson with WPR. Can I ask you a few questions? Do you know why the badger is Wisconsin's state animal? Any idea why you're on the state flag? I've seen this type before. Cute, but not a talker. Clearly, I needed someone with some more specialized knowledge.
My name is Jim Leary, and I'm a retired faculty at UW-Madison in Folklore and Scandinavian Studies.
Leary studies the history and culture of Midwestern people. He said the whole Wisconsin badger thing comes down to
lead mining in the late 1820s and into the 1830s and beyond in the southwest part of the state.
Yeah, lead mining.
In lead mining, there were little holes that people started to dig in and sometimes abandon, and they were called, you know, sometimes called badger holes. But the prevailing story is that the early settlers actually lived in these holes, and that's where the name came from.
Turns out, though, that probably never happened. Leary says historians can't find any reliable evidence that miners actually lived in their badger holes. But either way, the name stuck. So, to boil it down, the badger is Wisconsin's state animal because 200 years ago, people here went digging for lead. And actual badgers also dig holes?
He is a great digger. He's got those really long front claws that are fantastic at digging burrows really quickly.
Back at the zoo, curator Jess Thompson had plenty of other good facts about real badgers like Bucky and his cousins in the wild.
There are a couple different types of badgers. There are badgers that live in Europe, European badgers. There's obviously the honey badger that many people know about in Africa. And there are some badgers that live in Asia. And most of those species are much more social. But our North American badgers are really solitary.
Thompson says badgers are ferocious hunters.
They also have jaws that are really hard to dislocate because of the way that they're attached in their skull. So because of that, they're able to attach really firmly onto their prey.
But aside from hunting prowess and a shared history of digging, is there something about badgers that makes them a good symbol for Wisconsin?
Definitely. Yeah, these guys are so resourceful, and they're known for being tough and being able to make it through a lot of different circumstances. So a lot of great qualities.
John K. Wilson is a digital editor at WPR and is the co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. And this story came to us from a listener question as part of the Wisconsin Project. Submit your question and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now we're discussing K-12 learning gaps and the role of summer coursework. Last summer, news reports recognized that the state's largest school district, Milwaukee Public Schools, had record summer school attendance. About 25 miles due south, we find out how the Racine Unified School District is preparing for this summer. Was your child invited to attend summer school? Are they going? What barriers stand in the way for your family to participate? If your child went to summer school before, was it worth it? Did it help? 800-642-1234. Janelle Decker is Deputy Chief Academic Officer for the Racine Unified School District. Janelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. Can you start with some numbers for us? How many students enrolled last summer? How does that compare to what you see from families heading into this summer with invitations to attend summer school?
We had about 2,700 total students enroll, and we are expecting that we have about the same, if not a little more, because of the trajectory of who's registering right now. It's a big community need to have something over the summer for the kids.
How do you choose the students to invite? What benchmarks do you use? What do you look at?
We invite everybody.
Okay.
Our summer school is really well-rounded. We make sure that we have academic options, but also more enrichment options. So a STEM, STEAM, science option, Phi-Ed, music, art. We have a fun social studies course. So it doesn't have to be just focused on reading and math. A student can come in and enjoy the entire day in different types of enrichment options.
So how does summer school differ for younger students versus high school students?
High school is more focused around credit recovery.
Okay.
So if they have failed a course and they need to make that up in order to graduate by the end of the summer, that is where the majority of the students from high school, that's kind of their situation. And then in the younger grades, it's focused more on reading and math courses if they do need some help building those skills or a bunch of fun courses too.
What have you seen by way of learning loss in the pandemic? What does it look like in your district?
We're pretty similar to all the districts across the country. So we did see learning loss, and it's impacted our students anywhere from, I would say, 1 to 3 years, depending on how well they attended our virtual options. And then when we did come back in person, if they could attend in person on a regular basis as well. So summer school is an opportunity to have really small class sizes. We cap our academic courses at 15, so they get a lot of teacher attention. And it's a big benefit for any family and any student that maybe isn't very comfortable in their skills and they feel kind of lost in the larger class sizes during the school year. They can come into summer school, have more of a comfortable number of peers in that class, and get a lot more one-on-one attention.
When you say 1 to 3 years, do you mean that your students have fallen behind 1 to 3 academic grades in the pandemic, that you're seeing that trend?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. That's really scary.
It is. It is. So we have a lot of interventions that we're putting in place during the school year. And then, of course, summer school is there, too, to support all that learning that happened during the school year over the summer. We recognize that a lot of the research shows that there is more learning loss that happens over the summer, especially with low-income families. And that learning loss, unfortunately, is cumulative. So they could fall a year behind maybe by the time they're sixth grade from their middle income peers just because of the summer learning loss.
If your child has an individualized education program, or an IEP is the acronym we hear often, can they receive special education services during the summer school, or how does that work?
Absolutely. So if they do have something called ESY, Extended School Year, written into their IEP, they will have specific special ed services during the summer provided to them. And if they just have an IEP that does not have summer specific services, they are more than welcome and they do join any of our other courses that are available.
Do you have ever concerns about more students eligible or available to wanting spots open, or do you have ample space and teachers to accommodate the need that you see?
We do have ample space, and every single week we're monitoring how many families are registering and for what specific courses they're registering. So we start out by hiring a basic amount of staff, and we have specific set buildings. But if at any time that goes over the capacity that we expect, then we'll open more sites and we will attempt to hire more teachers.
How do you approach wraparound care if a parent is working when summer school lets out?
This summer in particular, we have a new partnership. One of the things that came out of the pandemic is a lot of community partners working together with us to really provide all of the services that our families need because of the impacts of COVID. So this year, our city is partnering with us to bring their Parks and Rec program that they used to have just at our local community centers into our schools. And that we are going to provide free for our families that need that extra care. And that goes from the end of summer school to 5 p.m.
Janelle Decker with us, Deputy Chief Academic Officer for the Racine Unified School District, includes 30 elementary, middle, and high schools. Do you think summer school can help a child develop, or do you worry that it is too much, that there is burnout? Is summer school a safety net of sorts, helping your child continue to catch up from significant learning loss in the pandemic? Still time to share your thoughts on summer school. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Janelle Decker here on the Ideas Network. It's a conversation about summer school on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Brookings issued a report this month that found the pandemic has had devastating impacts on learning. And it asked this central question, what will it take to help students catch up? And they said it's not a, quote, lost generation. We shouldn't give up hope, but the numbers are alarming and potentially demoralizing. Do you think summer school can right the wrongs? What else must happen to get kids back on track? It's 800-642-1234. Janelle Decker, Deputy Chief Academic Officer for the Racine Unified School District, with us for about 10 more minutes. Janelle, you know, President Biden, in his State of the Union, acknowledged the $122 billion from federal relief aid directed at schools, American Rescue Plan, ESSER funds that I'm talking about. How has Racine used federal funds in these times to shore up needs in your district?
We've used that money in a variety of ways. Not only academic, but also for social emotional needs and health needs for the community. So in terms of learning loss, we've hired additional interventionists for reading and math. So students that are falling behind can have more individualized or small group attention. We've hired more educational assistants to help in our youngest grades in kindergarten and first grade. And they've been trained with some of the additional money to help with early literacy skills. Students learn very rapidly in the early years. So we are taking more of a proactive mindset that we're going to intervene as quickly as possible and try to catch those students up as quickly as possible so that gap doesn't widen as they further their career in RUSD. We have had training for all of our teachers on various technology needs, social emotional needs, and different academic needs, like pacing out our curriculum differently due to what they are seeing in their classrooms right now. And then, of course, we did use them, use the dollars for COVID safety protocols and more social emotional supports in the buildings as well.
I'm hearing more individualized attention, earlier intervention in your approach. Do you think you would have been able to hire these reading and math interventionists or these additional educational assistants were it not for this federal aid? Would you be in the same place?
No, absolutely not. That federal aid has been critical and crucial for us to be able to support students above and beyond how we've been able to in the past. These are all additional supports and additional attention that our kids and our families have never had before. So that money was absolutely necessary for us.
Department of Public Instruction saying districts facing historic teacher shortages, teachers burned out in these times after 2 years in the pandemic. What are you seeing in your district in Racine? How are you dealing with this?
Yeah, we do see that same trend happening here. We appreciate everything that the teachers have been doing this year. One of the largest reasons why they're burned out is because they've been having to completely retool the way that they've taught for the past 3 years, and they've had to do it in zero time. So just learning and reconfiguring the way that they teach, the way that they assess the students, the additional family engagement and supports that they have to give because of extra trauma or troubles because of COVID. And to top that all off, we had a lot of absences for COVID, and there aren't many substitute teachers. So the time that teachers have, which is already limited during the day for them to prep in order to do their jobs, oftentimes they don't get. So teachers have to prep or have to sub on their prep periods. That means that all of that work that they're doing to prepare for the families and the students is happening before or after school. So very long work days, high stress, just really want what's best for the kids and the families in this community, and it can take a toll.
Are you still seeing that same shortage for substitute teachers?
Yes. We did make some adjustments in our pay, and we took a different angle, and we're trying to hire them more as permanent subs. So it's guaranteed full-time work in specific buildings instead of being called randomly in the morning and going to different sites. So there's different things that we've definitely tried, and it's been successful, but even still, yes, there's a shortage. And unfortunately, the teachers pay for that. I've even taken up subbing myself this year.
Talking with the Deputy Chief Academic Officer for the Racine Unified School District, Janelle Decker is here looking at the situation heading into summer. What questions do you have about summer school? Are you a student considering going through summer coursework? Share your experience. Do you think that summer school can help children with these academic gaps that have been caused by the pandemic? 800-642-1234. I want to return to summer school here, and transportation has also been an issue for some districts. How does Racine and, you know, some other districts address barriers to summer school like transportation?
Last year, we did have a shuttle, and we had various sites around the summer or around the city in the summer for the families to take advantage of, to shuttle them to a summer school site and drop them off in the afternoon. Unfortunately, it wasn't utilized to the extent that we would have hoped. So this summer, we are reaching out directly to those families, and if they have a transportation need, we're going to work with them on an individualized basis. If we do need to have one of our district vans, shuttles, any of our buses, if we need to set that up, we will. If we need to provide free bus passes, we will. So we're taking a different angle, but we don't ever want transportation to be a barrier. We'll work with every individual family to make sure that they can make it to summer school if they want to participate.
That is a lot of logistics planning? Is your district prepared for trying to navigate those logistics, especially when you have multiple families needing transportation?
Yes, absolutely. We've been planning routes. And like I said, we had them last summer too. We start planning for summer school in October. So we are definitely prepared for any type of need that comes up. We have different plans for whatever that may be.
I want to land on social emotional here for a moment, because families may be concerned the child attending is feeling isolated from siblings who are going to summer camps and having experiences outside of summer school. What advice do you have for a family with children who aren't attending summer school that they relate to the child who is and support them?
I would say that if there's anything that they can do to encourage just conversation or modeling of what that older sibling had learned, that would really help that younger sibling a lot. So if there was a specific activity they did that they can come and do with that younger sibling at home, encourage them to do that. If there are certain books that they might have read and they're basing some activities off of, maybe just recap those activities with the sibling at home. A lot of it is just sharing daily experiences and getting the younger kids excited and wanting to participate in some sort of summer activity that I think is most important.
Janelle, thank you for joining us.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Janelle Decker is Deputy Chief Academic Officer for the Racine Unified School District. Just ahead, we talk with a New Yorker Cartoon Caption Contest winner who hails from Mount Horeb and a professor who developed the algorithm that helps the magazine determine what is funny. We go inside the world of New Yorker cartoon captions with your questions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.